All right, back on the Young Turks, let me read a couple of tweets for you. L. Trotsky, 21st century, writes in.
Look who's back.
That's right. Come to think of it, it would be kind of cool to hear Cenk say, join me at the Trotsky camera. Okay. Well, you get $5,000. But I don't like where this is going.
What if Joe Manchin?
Could you imagine? Manchin's like, no, I'll be naming it Senator Manchin. Well, we do reserve the right to say no to if you want it to be named Charles Koch, for example. We will not be doing that, or ExxonMobil.
Right? This is how you end up with like Bodie McBoatface.
I know, right?
Camera McCamera face. Let's do it.
We might consider that. So, tytnetwork.com/go. In fact, here, let me quickly read you new donors. $27 from Lisa in Illinois, $50 from Steven in California, and $50 from Elizabeth in New York. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And then some tweets for you all. Well, I read the Trotsky one. Easily readable name says, Dems still don't get it. We don't love Bernie despite that he disagrees with the establishment. We love him because he does. Okay, very fair. And Annie says, unity doesn't mean you're all on the same page. It means working together for a common goal. Why does he have to conform to them?
Well, that's what you were saying. Right. And I think that's right, actually. He doesn't have to conform to them. But if you're working on a common goal, I think the Ossoff position was questionable, and that's it. I mean, that's fine. I also got some flack just now for saying, for citing that Bernie is not a Democrat, right? When you're out with the chairman of the Democratic National Committee and you're out with the party, I think it does provide valid contrast and context. I don't think during the presidential election it had 1 ounce of credibility when people said, "Oh, he's not a Democrat." It doesn't matter. But when you're out with the party, I think it makes a huge difference.
And to be further fair to you, Bernie himself recently reiterated that he's not a Democrat. That he's an independent. So that's fair to point out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. What's next, John?
Okay. Perhaps in an attempt to rehab the FBI's image, which has taken a bit of a beating recently, director James Comey is going to be giving a docuseries pretty wide access to one of the FBI's field offices in New York to produce a TV series about the sort of work the FBI does, which I'm sure is going to be a very balanced look, not propaganda. But let's figure it out together. We're going to take a look at a brief part of the trailer.
Pre-9/11, it was very much G-Man versus mobster. But post-9/11, FBI is first and foremost an intelligence agency that's kind of got a global reach.
FBI New York.
Join us as we go inside the New York office of the FBI and get an all-access look at the men and women on the front lines.
FBI, open the door!
They'll touch down and then make entry into that building here.
I can't think of any terrorism case that has not had some type of connection to New York.
An individual, we're trying to locate him, break him in if watch listing.
We need to find him.
When it comes to terrorism, the margin of error is zero.
Can't wait till the TYT What the Flick reviews of the FBI show.
Every episode.
Every single episode.
Because when you're fighting terrorism, the main thing you want to do is leave time for a TV show, to tape a TV show. Mm-hmm. Okay, wait, man, I'm on the hot trail of a terrorist here, but first my B-roll. Yeah. Okay.
I also love. Bomb. Hold on, the shot's not good. Hold on.
Being a New Yorker, I also love the sort of New York centric, the way there's New York and then just the rest of the world, right? It's like every bit of terrorism has something to do with New York, right? Except the ones that are in the 1,000 other places where that aren't
good
New York.
Folks of Paris would disagree to
right, me. And San Bernardino and Orlando. Right. And
Now, the funny thing is, the FBI actually has been doing really good work lately outside of the political stuff that they needlessly got involved in, or somewhat needfully, but in the wrong way. Anyway. Like, for example, they just stopped another terrorist plot. Yeah. There was the right winger, the sovereign citizen guy with the 1,000 rounds of ammunition who had planned to go kill all these people. There was a guy in the middle of the country, or a group in the middle of the country, I always forget if it's Missouri, I think it's Missouri, where they were going to detonate these giant truck bombs around what new immigrants that had come in. I think they were Somali. in that area, and they were going to kill perhaps hundreds of people, and the FBI spotted it and took them down. And story after story, I get super frustrated at the CIA. I cannot believe we have not gotten the leader of ISIS. I can't believe that all those guys we deposed and all the coups we did, and we got nothing on Kim Jong-un. So I get super frustrated by the CIA, but I think the FBI has actually done some wonderful work. That doesn't mean that I agree that they should do a propaganda show for the FBI on USA Network, because that's definitely what that is.
And they also, they took down that ring that was going to, I believe it was going to blow up multiple African-American churches. And their stated goal was to start a race war, and they took that down. It's amazing that things like this aren't really news when they accomplish these goals.
Yeah,
for some reason, maybe it has something to do with some of the variables involved in the stories, but not big news. We have a statement though from James Comey about this show. He said, "We have to care what people think of us. The faith and confidence of the American people is the bedrock. I worry sometimes that people don't know us. We did a lot last year that confused people. We are not on anybody's side. We really don't care. Also, we really don't think about the timing of some of the statements we make in public."
No, he didn't actually say that. But he did a lot to confuse people.
There was a lot in that one statement, though. Yeah, so you know, like each sentence wasn't quite tied to the one before it.
Exactly,
sort of like, let's cover everything in one statement.
So it might be, like I agree, the FBI has done a lot of good, but they also get involved in investigations that we don't agree, like tracking student organizations, like there was in I'm not going to remember the particular case, but they do get involved in things that we think, or at least I think, go beyond the bounds of their actual responsibilities and what they're supposed to be doing. But especially in America, I mean, this is not the first time that a U.S. government organization has been given access to, for instance, the field offices of the FBI. But we also have just one example I was able to think of. I wish we had What the Flick here, because they could do a better job of it. But Michael Bay, for instance. On the Transformers set in New Mexico, a handful of military personnel stand by at all times to help Bay strategize his attack scenes. They have a representative of the U.S. Army's Entertainment Liaison Group giving him access to free tanks, Humvees, and rocket launchers. There have been movies where the Navy has worked closely with filmmakers. And that's great because it seems more realistic. But you also know that there's not going to be criticism of the military in those cases. There was a movie that went had some Marines and they worked with them very closely. And that's fine. It makes it super exciting and interesting, the movies. But we also know that Americans are prone to patriotism that sometimes goes too far and has deadly consequences. The media is very deferential to the military or to military, the use of their force. And so I don't know that it's necessarily a good thing when people are going to be watching this show and not realize that there's an inherent bias there, that they're only going to portray the FBI in a certain way. They're not going to be super critical of it. I don't know that this is a good time for that.
Well, it's technically a reality that you actually cannot use Pentagon things like a giant aircraft carrier in your movie if you're not doing a positive depiction of the Pentagon. The Pentagon literally will not allow it.
Yeah.
So if you're
Pentagon things like a giant aircraft carrier.
They're the only ones who have them.
Right.
Right. So if you see any kind of military hardware on that scale in a movie, that means the Pentagon literally said, this is acceptable. We find it sufficiently to our purposes, which is basically propaganda. So, and some of them was initiated by the Pentagon. They wanted Top Gun. They wanted all of these movies to be positive propaganda for the Pentagon. Now, look, if you're doing it for patriotism, okay, maybe some folks can argue with that. But if the end result is we get into more wars, well, that's much more problematic, right? Now, the FBI is not involved in wars. That's internal, but still, they're not going to do a negative, and they're not going to do a balanced look at the FBI. The FBI gave them permission because they wanted a great PR opportunity for the FBI.
Well, for the record, I just want to say thank goodness that they did give us Top Gun. Because now we have Top Gun.
And of course, best valuable scene ever in a movie.
Hands down, right? There's no competition there. As someone who's worked with the military and gone on embeds and so on, yes, they do require a lot of information up front. They want to know what it is you want to do. They want to know how you think you're going to, you know, tell this story, what the angle is, all those things.
It's like your basketball coach.
It all comes
down to your intention.
What is your intention? But they have never stood, you know, they don't get any editorial control after the fact. You go and you report and you do what you're going to do in the field and you come back. That's on the journalism side.
That's right, exactly.
On the entertainment side, it's a totally different thing. I don't know what this is.
This doesn't look like anything.
I don't know the intention.
Well, it's on the USA Network, so it says it all, right?
So yeah, on the journalism side, there's still some misunderstandings. Famously, Michael Hastings, who reported there was an assumption that he would report positive stuff, and he's like, "Well, you didn't tell me positive stuff, and I reported what I had." But that is still definitely within the guidelines and acceptable, etc. And obviously, it wound up having consequences for General McChrystal. But we're talking about entertainment. This is a TV show, and in the movies, the guidelines are very clear. You will be pro-Pentagon, otherwise you will not have access to this stuff in your movies. And in this case, you're not shooting an anti-FBI movie that James Comey is, or I should say TV show, that James Comey is excited about. And like, hey, this will show you a new thing. And then the explosions, come on. It's obviously marketing. Yeah.
You're still gonna watch though, aren't you?
No, I hardly ever watch any TV. All right, we gotta take another break here. When we come back,
a little bit of activism going on around the country tomorrow.
That's right, and some scary stuff here in LA.
Yes.
Okay.
Lead study, and the numbers are mind blowing.
It is nuts. All right, nuts. When we return. Jeremy Fair writes in, footage of Flint Town Hall makes me angry, arresting people for speaking up as residents of poison land of the free. Right, shake my head. Well, I think we're going to get to a story on that soon, and we share your frustration. Back to the journalism campaign, $50 from Robert in Virginia, $50 from Karen in Georgia, and $127 from Joseph in California. Oh, nice, 1696.
It's close.
Okay, let's keep it going, guys, because there's only 8 days left. And then we're done. If we get to 2 million, we're going to hire 2 new reporters. 1.75 is one. And if you donate 127, you get this new cool shirt, House TYT, Game of Thrones TYT combination. Did we get permission from HBO? No, we did not. Okay.
By the way, 40 new donors since John said, you know, let's make it an even 50K.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And I want to thank our members of the day, Richard Barron and Dennis Chavez. So appreciate it. You get a post game today from the crew. And we've had some doozies of post games this week, which everybody gets if they're a member. TYTnetwork.com/join to become a member. Yep. What's next?
Okay. So far this year, we've had a number of really high-profile gatherings, demonstrations, rallies, and marches on specific issues. We had the Women's March right around the time of the inauguration, far surpassing it in terms of how many people showed up, thankfully. We had the Tax Day marches very recently. There were marches in support of immigrants who were being detained once the travel ban started. And this weekend, we have another. This Saturday is the March for Science, where thousands of scientists and their pro-science supporters are going to be marching in cities across the country and some in other countries as well. The main march in Washington will feature speakers including Mona Hanna-Attisha, the pediatrician who blew the whistle on the water crisis in Flint, Michigan originally, science educator Bill Nye, as well as other hosts and performers. It's going to begin with a rally, the main march, at 9 a.m. Eastern, followed by the march. Organizers expect more than 500 other marches to take place around the world. And I polled some of my Twitter followers about this, and there were big cities, there were small cities. In Canada, it's going on. In Mexico, it's going on. And it's very important because the moves that we've seen from the administration so far have been not even just normal Republican aggressively anti-science, but the amount of defunding is beyond what I even feared would happen. And we're going to get into those numbers shortly. But first, I want to read a quote from Rush Holt, head of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, who I was able to be involved with a panel in New York last year, speaking out in support of the march, saying, "Scientists are often reticent to go public. In this case, the level of anxiety about the state of science, its place in our society and in our government, and whether the conditions under which it can thrive are being adequately maintained and defended has led people to go into the public square in what appear to be unusually large numbers and unusually great enthusiasm." And again, scientists, they obviously are concerned about government policy, especially when it comes to their own funding and whether what they learn and reveal is actually put into effect in terms of policy, but don't often necessarily get directly involved in politics themselves. And so this is something slightly different, but they're being careful, at least how the march is being pitched. March for Science organizers have framed the march as a, quote, celebration of science and a nonpartisan opportunity to defend the role science plays in the global community.
Why? Now,
there is there's an undercurrent of some partisanship because both parties don't treat scientists the same way, but they don't want to turn people off. The issues that they investigate and work on and will be discussing at this march have consequences for all of us.
Yeah, I was wondering why they bothered. Are there any Republican scientists left? Or are there any scientists left who are still Republicans?
Yeah.
Because there used to be, but
petro
I don't know.
Petro-engineers.
Petro-engineers, okay. Right.
No, I know some big lib petro-engineers, actually.
Yeah. Well, no, this is greatly ironic because a lot of the defense contractors have to have a lot of scientists that work to build those missiles. I know a couple of them, and they're all super libs.
I do too.
And Rush Holt was a congressman who was also a scientist, and now he's not in Congress and he's running this
group. Yeah, Rush Holt was a rare, great congressman. And he always championed science while in Congress, was from New Jersey, so... And appeared on The Young Turks many times. So here to Rush Holt. Yes.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, this is what my dad had been asking for. So here's what I mean by that. During the Bush years, for example, he would say, why don't all the professors go out there and march? Well, they know he is wrong, right? Or he would then substitute in historians, you know, legal scholars, say, all the lawyers should march, right? So, Dad, here you go. They're doing it. Yeah. It's the scientists going, we will now march.
Why did they wait so long?
Perhaps too long. But it is super important. I mean, we're looking at potential cuts to the EPA, like a blanket 31%, huge amount of their actual workers being cut, 18% cut to the NIH. We're talking about entire graduating classes of graduate students going into the sciences and having effectively, under the current plan, possibly no funding to go towards their work. I mean, this is going to have ripple effects that affect, obviously, climate change. I mean, that's the big one. But we're talking about medicine. We're talking about technology and development. I mean, this is the amount that these cuts, the damage that it can do to technology and science going forward, it's difficult to overstate it. And that's why it's so important that this is going on and that people show support for it. I am just waiting to see the right-wing reaction to this march tomorrow. The way that Fox News will address it, the way that Breitbart and Drudge and all them. I mean, they despise exactly these sorts of people, the academics and the scientists. There's going to be a level of vitriol that I think is going to be absolutely disgusting. But these are people who are literally fighting not just for their own careers, but for the continuation of our way of life.
I find it so interesting that they felt this was necessary to do. Because this is not something like, hey, let's just tweet about it and start a hashtag. To organize in this way, en masse, at this level, on this scale. And scientists are typically, you know, I'm thinking back to all the people that I worked with during the Gulf oil spill. It was very hard to get scientists to talk about anything other than their work because that's all they care about. When you dedicate yourself to something like that, that's really all you want to focus on. You don't want to talk about the politics around it or the circumstances around it or the controversy. So the fact that they organize like this, and if they show up in the numbers we expect them to, it's something remarkable. It's something worth taking note of.
Yeah, I think that the reason they're doing it is because I think their work is now endangered, and they feel like there's a frontal assault on science, and so that's what gets people to actually hit the streets. I mean, that's why we had so many protests in Vietnam, because if you didn't protest, you might go to Vietnam and die, right? Yeah. And in this case, the very foundation of science is being challenged. And by the way, you might know that you're in the wrong party if you're against the guys who bring you facts. You know, so if you're, professors, they're always teaching you facts. Scientists with their facts, right? We got to rip them down, and let alone, of course, the media. I know the media is a little bit more trickier topic these days, but they also are in the business of giving you facts. Those are all the three things that Republicans hate and want to tear down.
And then they nominate, they nominate and elect somebody who could not care less about facts.
So. Yeah, and my final point, one of the reasons that I think the time has come and they finally have to come out is partially it's the career thing, it's their funding, but there's always, the Republicans have been pushing for cuts to funding for those things for all time, basically, and have been successful in the past. But specifically on the issue of climate change, we don't have time to lose on this issue. If he gets his way on the environment, then it's not just that the oil companies win briefly, we lose for a little while. This is an issue where we're already behind the curve. We don't have 4 years or 8 years to wait. This is one of the big warnings that I gave when people are willing to roll the dice on Donald Trump for 4 or 8 years. On certain issues, we don't have those years to wait. And so thank God scientists are willing to risk the politicization, are willing to risk being attacked publicly to do what's right and to make a big deal out of this issue while there is still time to do something about it.
And if you think I'm overly politicizing it, see, that's not fair. There's a lot of Republicans in favor of science. Well, no, they're, in the case of climate change, let alone many others, they're literally against 97% of the world's scientists.
Yeah.
Then you might be against science.
Yeah, and if you vote for people who are publicly against it, you're against it by default.
That's what you voted for.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, last story. We're going to try to fit it in. Very important. Reuters has released the results of their investigation into child blood lead levels across LA County. And these numbers are absolutely insane. People always say that in videos and in, you know, the titles of articles. But this is really scary stuff. It's scary in the sorts of places where we expect higher blood lead levels, thanks to the investigations that have been going over the past few years, like poor areas. But we're talking about basically a universal problem across LA County, including neighborhoods with multi-million dollar homes all over the place. This is a problem basically everywhere. More than 17% of small children tested in the heart of San Marino have shown elevated levels of lead in their blood, according to previously undisclosed LA County health data. That's a far more well-off area than where I live in LA County, but still, that's 17%. If you live in that area, you should now be scared, but it goes beyond that. That rate exceeds the 5% rate of children who tested high for lead in Flint, Michigan during the peak of that city's water contamination crisis.
Wow.
So the area where finally people started to pay attention to this, and thankfully they're taking way too long to fix it, but finally people are starting to pay attention. In San Marino, it's three times worse in terms of how prevalent it is. In all, though, Reuters identified 323 neighborhood areas across LA County where the rate of elevated tests was at least as high as in Flint. In 26 neighborhood areas, the rate was at least twice Flint's. And this is effectively an LA County specific follow-up to a story that we discussed near the end of last year. Reuters identified more than 3,300 US neighborhood areas with documented childhood lead poisoning rates, double those found in Flint. That is across all of the United States, thousands of counties that have problems that are even worse than Flint's. And this is not to take away anything whatsoever from Flint, but to give you an idea of how severe this problem actually is.
So this is exactly why when we criticize the mainstream media from time to time, it is not to tear them down as the right wing wants to do. It is to help them do a better job. So that's why I want to celebrate stories like this. I mean, it's a disaster substantively, and we'll get to that in a second. But Reuters is doing wonderful work in exposing this.
Yeah.
So, and they've been on it from day one. And when they released that report, and this is part of what's frustrating about cable news, specifically television news sometimes, right? Because, oh my God, I was like, there's over 3,000 communities across the country that have a lead problem worse than Flint. Why is that not the biggest story? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about all these imaginary fears, oh, terrorism, and there is one case, you know, every once in a while, thank God, you know, not it's not an epidemic, but there's far more mass shootings, you know, it's et cetera, et cetera. This is affecting all of our kids across the country. And so when they make it more specific, and it's in your neck of the woods, it scares the bejesus out of you. Yeah. We live in LA. And when you see that your kids might be getting lead in their system, and there is nothing, like there is no allowable amount of lead in a human body. Yeah. Scientists have said it is damaging no matter how small it is, mm-hmm. let alone at these levels. And lead could decrease IQ, it does, and tests have proven this out. Could even make people more violent in the future. Can you imagine the poison that we're putting in our kids? This is the thing that people should be talking about nonstop.
Yeah, and it says a couple of things about what you just said, Jen. First of all, what John said when he read it, he said previously undisclosed, and that's what Reuters did here. Yeah. You know, the fact that this was not disclosed, it took journalists to go in there and get down into it, and that's so important. The other thing is, you know, I remember when I was with, well, I can say it now, with the Al Jazeera, when we would go into these stories, and everybody around the table would say, oh, it's so depressing. But Al Jazeera would put on these stories, and they were depressing all the time. But at least it got you to, you know, prick up your ears a little bit and say, you know what, this is actually something that's worth knowing and people should talk about, not to actually even minimize the effects of terrorism and war and all the other things on the sensational side. This isn't a sensational story, but it's so important that it's being told, and I think that's what's so great about what Reuters is doing and journalists do every day, too.
And I know one of the reasons we're talking about it is because it cuts across socioeconomic lines, right? We're talking about how, like, $2 million houses that are affected and so on. Right. But I also think it's important to remember that the way these things get solved does end up going back to those people who are more vulnerable with less resources, not being able to fix it or help themselves in the way that other people will. There was in this one story, that anecdote at the end, right, about a wealthier family who found out that their son had elevated levels and were able to put him in $200 session occupational therapy and move immediately like that. And most families can't do that.
Yeah, they're stuck. Once they find out.
They find out after the effect has already been there for years and it affects you for the rest of your life.
So I think Jordan Cheriton for the Young Turks has actually been doing great work on this, and he helped expose what was happening in Indiana. Again, much worse levels in Indiana, in East Chicago, Indiana. He was in Flint just yesterday covering a town hall where people were arrested for being too loud at the town hall. So all that is on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. But Reuters doing it on a mass scale here, and if we cared about the things that are actually important and dangerous and affect us personally, this is all you would see on cable news. And instead, it's a blip in the radar. You know, we're covering
it. I talk about climate change too.
Yeah, and Reuters is doing a fantastic job. But this is what we got to fix. Trump wants to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure. Great, spend it on this. Don't privatize the roads like your current plan is. Spend the money on this. We need this fixed so that we protect all of our kids. All right, we got to go. We're out of time. Amna Nawaz, thank you so much for joining us. Everybody check out our podcast, Uncomfortable. Okay, reporter and anchor on ABC News, Michael Short, John Iderola. Thank you, guys. And that's it.
Bye-bye.
We never.